from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs. This is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Welcome back to Locked On Chiefs. It's another week. I know you guys heard what Chris and Seth went through in terms of all the trade ideas yesterday. A lot of interesting scenarios in there. And if you missed that, go back and check that out from yesterday's show. We're going to move on today. Going to talk about the draft in particular. Going to be joined by Matt Derrick here of Chiefs Digest in a little bit. But before we get to him, I want to go over a couple of things that are going on, some things that are, you know, of interest around Chiefs Kingdom. Before we get heavy into the draft talk, and I am burning the midnight oil, working my tail off to get this year's Rogue Analytics Athletic Matrix Draft Guide ready for you guys. It's up there now. Last year's is, so you can take a look at it. It's for a dollar. There's a link in the show notes. You can check that out for a buck and see what this year's is going to be similar to. A couple of different things. Couple of extra features that are going to be in some of the profiles. And basically what it is the top draftable athletic scores as I build the matrix around functional movement of what guys do at different positions on the football field. And it gives you an idea of pure athleticism in being applied to what they have to do once they get onto a roster. So very, very interesting stuff. You pair it with some of the tape scouting as well as the interviews and those things. And that gives you a complete picture of an athlete. So check that out if you're interested. And one of those guys that is kind of one of the hallmarks, an athlete that you always compare to because of his production, is Rob Gronkowski. And he announced yesterday that he is going to retire. It is sayonara off into the sunset. And I know that a lot of folks listening to this podcast are not going to be too worried about it. So enjoy that. What it clearly means is that Travis Kelce now becomes arguably the best tight end in this league. And personally, I feel that he is. People are going to argue that George Kittle is as well. And they have a reasonable argument. He performed very well in last season's output, and particularly without Garoppolo and up and down. But I think if you look over the arc of it, I think there's still a lot more that Kelce can do and has proven that he can do over time. So I'm going to continue to give him the edge. It's going to be an interesting battle for the next couple of years to see who can really take that title. And I'm going to be betting pretty heavily on Travis Kelce, especially as this next evolution happens with the Mahomes at quarterback and being really what is a go-to receiver for him. So I'm excited about that, and I know you guys are as well. But I just want to get that out there that it's not every day that a guy that can be argued as one of the best ever at his position retires. So we'll see him later. Does change the outlook for the Patriots, I think. And changes the window. We'll talk about that here another day when we start talking about how this all rolls out post-draft as well as free agency and what that team in particular looks like for the Chiefs, who I think clearly have to be aiming at them and over them. Another bit of interesting information. Darquez Dennard actually signed back in Cincinnati, was in Kansas City for a visit, and you know, we were all kind of waiting on that last week. No news ever really materialized, especially once Breland signed. And I think Bashaud Breland coming in gives you an idea that they got the guy that they wanted as a preference. And I don't blame them for being gun shy. The Chiefs had kind of a long negotiation with him last season. So you have to make preparations that maybe you're not going to get, you know, all of the forward momentum that you would hope at that point. But I think they ended up getting the better player. Certainly statistically they did. Dennard gave up 75% completion percentage in 2018 to 58% for Breland. So I think, yes, the sample sizes are different, but I think that's a significant issue. And I think that's truly, Dennard is a guy that's been trying to battle back from a really slow start to his career. I think the Chiefs did well to get out of that way, especially given that he's going to make double the money that Breland is. So I think the Chiefs did a good job in negotiating value there and getting a guy that can really help them. So that's a plus at this point. Now, what else is going on? The leadership of the Chiefs, both Brett Veach and Andy Reid, are in Arizona for the annual meetings. They're doing the things that they do. You know, Reid's in Hawaiian shirts while everybody else is in, you know, button-down shirts and some even in overcoats in Arizona, which doesn't make any sense to me, but I guess it is only March. But and Brett Veach is among a very interesting group of GMs now, with a little bit more turnover the last two seasons, but still clearly the young guy of the group, and looks to be making his mark. We're going to see how this turns out over the next few seasons, but it's interesting to see that around the league, so many different opinions of Brett Veach, and you hear a bunch of things coming out of the meetings, and I'm not going to go through them quote by quote, but it seems across the league that he's got a solid reputation, a lot of mutual respect between him and the other GMs, and I think making tough decisions, being tough in negotiations in terms of trades, et cetera, is going to do well for him and the organization in the long run, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can pull off. I think there is more to come. More up his sleeve, so to say. And that's going to be something that's beneficial for the team as it goes on. And that's something that you can't really backtrack off of once you build that reputation to begin with. So getting off on a good start around the league with that reputation amongst your peers that are now general managers, including the new guy on the block, Mike Mayock, who's had some kind things to say about Brett Veach. I think overall it puts you in a good position. Now, you can argue some of the decisions he's made already. I think, remember, I will caution everybody, the draft resolution, like, give it a couple of years. Everyone says, you know, the common thread is evaluate a draft class 3 years into their pro careers. And, you know, you can call that two, you can call it four, I think, depending on position and circumstance, particularly, you can give that a little leeway. But it, as a general rule, I think that's smart. You got to let guys develop a little bit because a lot of what goes on in selections in a given draft are projections for the future of what they will become. Experience, level of coaching, all kinds of things go into that. So don't be too quick to judge yet, especially, you know, I know a lot of folks are fired up about the Speak selection. We're going to get into that as we go along, and I think this is going to be a turning point for Speaks in his career. Having adapted to what was really a fish out of water for him playing in the Sutton 3-4 defense, now being able to go back to a 4-3 look, even though the nickel is going to be the nickel, it's still one of those things that home is where the heart is, where you feel comfortable. And I think that, especially for rookies, goes a long way in helping them make the transition. So I'm still feeling positive about what Breland Speaks can pull off. We're going to have to see him develop, but there's always a big jump between year one and year two, and I'm expecting to see a lot out of it. And it's obviously going to have a toll on our overall impression of Brett Veach after this next season. So that's where we're at right now. That's it for the news. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll start talking with Matt Derrick. Now you can get Locked On Chiefs on the brand new podcasting app, Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all the normal places. We're here for you 5 days a week, all off season long with guests, analysis, film review, athleticism, my draft guide, and all kinds of stuff from The Athletic and Chiefs Digest. Make sure you get subscribed today and you can do it over on the Himalaya podcasting app. So we're back. We got to make sure that we get as much Matt Derrick on the show as we possibly can. And I've missed him the last couple of times just because of scheduling. So, Matt, how are you?
Not too bad, Ryan. How are you doing?
You know, I'm running. I'm burning the midnight oil. So it is what it is.
I know you've got the draft guide coming out. I've been hitting pro days. So, yeah, I mean, we've been all over the place.
Yeah, I'm spending more hours. I think you're spending more miles.
Probably, yes.
But, yeah, I am knee deep in the draft and I'm getting most of the data so I can get the guide out. And I already told all the folks about that. And I'll make sure you get a copy as soon as it's ready. You'll get the first one probably. But I'm hearing some different things and it's got me kind of shifting my focus, not necessarily from producing the guide, but double checking what I have at a couple of positions. And I want to get into a couple of those scenarios with you because I know your perspective on the Chiefs is from covering it locally and having context at the team. And a lot of these other things are not necessarily that way, but I have heard from a couple of people. Who I know claim to have sources inside the organization that I do not. And they are, multiple of them are telling me that the Chiefs are taking a serious, hard look at replacing Mitch Morse in this first round at number 29, which to this point in the offseason has been all conjecture about edges and corners. And do you feel, from what you've seen around the organization this offseason, that there might be some truth to that kind of look?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, whether it's that they end up, you know, using a first round pick to do something, a little bit may just, you know, be determined by what's out there. But is that a position that maybe is flying a little bit below the radar that maybe we should be paying a bit more attention to? Absolutely. And it certainly is. It's hard to draw a lot of conclusions with the last time the Chiefs went out and got Mitch Morse, because that was John Dorsey's draft and it's a little bit different. But I still think there's probably a few dots that you could connect there about what they would do. And, you know, hey, is first round value what you can get at center? I mean, there are some people who are going to tell you that it's an overdraft if you overreach to grab a center that early. But if there's a guy that they really like, that's go get him. I mean, if that's who you think is the best player, the player that can make the most impact, and it is. I mean, that's a pretty impactful position. And right now, going into the season, they're really, you know, I mean, you got journeymen who are really in position to be in that spot, and that's a pretty big spot to have, and you'd like to have some stability there. So, you know, it does not surprise me at all if the Chiefs are looking in that position. It might surprise me a bit if they use that number 29 pick. I think they would be more likely to maybe move down. But one thing that's still pretty common amongst the Chiefs, you know, is that they still look across that offensive line, even with the move from John Dorsey to Brett Veach, evaluating versatility. Mm-hmm. And so many of the people that they have targeted over, you know, since Veach has taken over, have fit that John Dorsey mold of looking for guys who, you know, maybe college left tackles who can play a lot of positions and kick them inside. I mean, they're not dead set necessarily on the idea that the guy that they go out and get to be their center is a guy that has played center. I mean, they're willing to look all across the line to find the guy.
Well, and I'm glad that you bring that up, because, you know, the common thread of Andy Reid and Andy Heck makes a lot of sense there, right? But there are two prospects that, especially as I'm burning through the O-line parts done, I've got the data I need on those guys. And when you look to compare them athletically, there's one guy that is very, very similar to Mitch Morse athletically, and the power that he produces and the agility he has out in space. And it's the guy that Matt Miller in particular has been talking about, the Chiefs being interested in, Garrett Bradbury out of North Carolina State. A guy, again, that can move much like Mitch did. And he actually doesn't have to make that transition from tackle to center because he played center in college. And I think it's he's one of those guys. I think he's going to be highly sought after. I'm not sure he's there at 29, but if you really have the guy that you feel is at the top of your board in terms of that interior, that center position, do you see any problem with them using 29 if they can't get a trade partner?
No, I don't think it is a problem. I mean, like I said, if that's the guy that you target and it's something that you feel strongly in, you go get the guy, especially if somebody you think might not even fall. And you're right. I mean, that's a prototypical guy right there. I mean, what, he's 6'3", 300 pounds, can move pretty well, was All-American. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where you have the exception to the rule that you like guys that can move around and have some versatility. If you got a guy who's played the spot and is a star at it, and that's what this guy is. So no, I mean, there's no worry there about, you know, converting to the position, but you're right. I mean, even with what the Chiefs offense is now, they're still going to ask their offensive line to do the same things that they've always done. And a big part of that is getting to the outside and getting downfield and making blocks anywhere. And maybe that's even more important with Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, because you need offensive line guys who can run around and chase after him and pick up some blocks from time to time. So I'm half serious there. I mean, you've got to be a little athletic to play with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
So no, I mean, he would be in the candidate, and I think that somebody that they could be looking at pretty closely.
Yeah, when you have to be able to, you know, block for a left-handed pass at any given time, you got to be able to move a little bit. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Again, I don't think he's going to be there at 29. So there's another guy that's getting some interest, and he's a little bit more of a classic power type guy. And he projects more like somewhere between athletically between a Forrest Lamp and a Joe Tooney. And that is Jonah Williams, who's played tackle at Alabama. They're talking about bringing him inside, maybe even all the way to center. He's got a little bit of background in his pre-Alabama career. So that's another guy that I think you definitely may have another shot at it. I don't know if teams are going to see it like I see it, that I think he's probably better inside. And I don't know that they're going to want to spend a top 20 pick on a guard or center, but they might. You never know. But it gives them another option to do that if that's really their focus. That's a guy that I think really would be best in a trade down situation. Let me ask you this. Given how aggressive Brett Veach has been to this point in not necessarily with the moves that he makes, but being aggressive and sticking to his plan, whatever or however outlandish that plan might be, if he can't get a trade up, I expect him to trade back. And I still feel like a trade back into, you know, the mid upper 30s, 37, 38 is still a decent value, and it might allow them to still get alignment that they like. Is that something that you would like to see them do?
You know, to me, it's a dual-edged sword there. I mean, it really is, because we've talked about it with Chris Jones. How much would you like to have that fifth year option for Chris Jones right now, if for no other reason than just the flexibility about what you can do there? It's going to cost them. I mean, that's going to cost them a lot of money if they want to keep Chris Jones, when, you know, they would have a little bit more cost-controlled option if they had that fifth year. And that's why, to me, I think those end of the first round picks have some tremendous value. And why they maybe are maybe a little bit more valuable than early second picks, because you've got that flexibility. And that's something that you're giving away when you do that. I mean, if I were a GM, and maybe this is why I would be a bad GM, if I've got a 29 pick and somebody wants me to move down to 35, I want some premium value there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want some extra juice if I'm going to be giving up that fifth year option on a guy. You know, And look at Mitch Morse. I mean, it's a perfect example. I mean, Chiefs went out and got him, you know, right there in the middle of the second. You know, and that wasn't really a, you know, a option necessarily to move up and grab him at the end of the first. But, you know, it does show a willingness of this organization that if this is a position that they feel is a need, they're not afraid to spend a high round draft pick to address it. And you know, I wouldn't necessarily get, especially given the point that Brad Veach has made about trying to make sure that he's got draft capital and he's got salary cap capital that he can spend, is that you have the flexibility to do whatever you need. So if you need to move up in the first round, you can do that, and they can kick back if they need to. But I would expect that they're going to kick back in the second. I would expect them also to be looking to try and kick some of those draft resources into, you know, 2020 and 2021. That's how the Patriots do it. I mean, you know, the Patriots make sure that when they move around the draft, they do it, and that gives them more picks in future years too.
Yeah, that's playing chess instead of checkers. I like where you're going with that. And to finish this up, I think if they do end up stuck and they can't get that value in moving either up or down, and they do have to go there, there's going to be guys like Eric McCoy and Chris Lidstrom that I think may be available there. Those are two interior linemen that, again, have that magic thing that you talked about in versatility. And athletically, they're both high enough on the scale. They're not Mitch Morse and LDT, because they are literally, in the 6 years I've been doing this, they are two of the top five athletic linemen to come into this draft. So they're not at that level, but they're close. They're in the top 15. And I think that's, again, when you're talking about maintaining this zone blocking system and being able to move for Mahomes, I think that's going to be key. And those are two other names to watch. Why don't we take a break? I want to come back and talk about the defense as well, because Lord knows we haven't talked about that enough.
We have a powerful new feed to tell you about. Check out Locked On NFL Net on Twitter. It is all the inside information from our hosts for all the Locked On shows for all of the NFL teams in one Twitter feed. That's LockedOnNFL.net on Twitter. Check that out today.
So we found out, or what was it, Monday, or I found out Monday anyway, that they had Denard in and that they passed on him. He went back to Cincinnati. They ended up with Breland. And I know you and I haven't talked about Breland since his signing, but generally, does that give you a positive outlook on what you think they made decision-wise in going with a guy who was injured for a lot of last season?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was really the key reason why they didn't get things done last summer when he came into St. Joe, was that, you know, the Chiefs read the medical situation perfectly, that, you know, their medical team was telling him that he wasn't going to be able to play until midseason, and he came in at week 9, and that's exactly how it played out. And the Chiefs were not looking for, you know, a short-term back of the season 8-week rental. They were, if they were going to bring in Speaks, they wanted to be able to have that second year, because they knew the first year was going to be a real wash, that they weren't going to get anything out of it. And I think you even saw that with Packers, even though I think the Packers misused him. They got him doing things that he's not necessarily good at as a result. That's part of why he had maybe a rough year last year, but the injury was a big part of it too. Now I think you feel pretty comfortable that this is a guy who's a little bit more healthy, and I think that's a reasonable deal that the Chiefs ended up investing in him, and it gives them what they want, which is, you know, some veteran experience to compare back there, and gives them some insurance and a backdrop if some of the young guys maybe don't work out as well as they're expecting.
Well, I agree with you, and I think it sets them up to be able to take a player that they value. I don't know that the whole league is going to value. And certainly athleticism at the corner position in particular has been interesting, because Marcus Peters was not an ace athlete. never was. And the interesting thing for me, the guy at the top of my draft board right now, and I have not finished all of the CBs in terms of looking at film, but Byron Murphy's my number one at this moment. Another guy from Washington, another guy that has decent athleticism, but not great. And unfortunately, I feel like he's best in a zone kind of scheme. And the alternative to him is Greedy Williams, who's, I feel, the best guy in a man kind of scheme. But let me ask you this. Just because the Chiefs have played so much man in the past, and Spagnuolo has a history of being a little bit more flexible, do you think, given the personnel that they have, that this staff might be leaning towards starting to play a lot more zone and not just a touch?
It could be. I mean, it really could. And I think you're right. I mean, I think the group that they're putting together does give them a little bit more flexibility to present some different looks when necessary, too. Maybe against the, you know, particular offenses. So I think they do get that flexibility. I still expect that they're probably going to play a lot of man. They got the guys to do it. But you know, you mentioned, you know, bringing in Breland and everything and how he fits in. And I mean, good grief. I think if your dream plan works out, which is that Traveris Ward develops into a guy who can play every down on the outside, and Bashaud Breland became your nickel guy who comes in on the outside when you're kicking Kendall Fuller in, that's your dream scenario. I'm not sure that's how it's going to work out for the Chiefs, but I think that's the one that they're hoping for. But we always talk about the draft, about drafting done, not just for need right now. And let's face it, I mean, a big reason why the Chiefs went out and got Breland was to make sure that they're not going into the draft having and forcing themselves to go corner because they don't have enough guys there. So they do have that flexibility now. They don't have to. They're not feeling like they're pressed into a corner, no pun intended,
right,
of having to go out and get a guy there. They've got some flexibility now so that they can pick and choose. If the guy that they like falls to them, they can do it. If there's somebody that they like, they can move up. They do that, but they don't have to give up the kingdom in order to go up and make that move. So that is a pretty key signing from that standpoint. But you're right. I mean, it's a position I expect them to look at, and the guys you've named, I wouldn't have any problem if the Chiefs went in those directions.
Yeah, I have to think so too. And I think what they do at that position, particularly if they do it in the first round, is really going to give us an idea of where they're trying to go with their defensive philosophy for 2019. Maybe not for the long term, but at least for 19 as maybe a first transition year. The other interesting thing is, there's been a number of edge guys connected with the Chiefs in terms of visits, you know, conversations at pro days. And you always got to take those with a grain of salt. But I'm hearing a lot of things about two guys in particular. One in Charles Omenihu from Texas, who I really think fits that kind of mold that Alex Okafor, like Breland, already fills, that so that you have that squared away if you can't get anything done. But another long, tall guy, not an explosive speed rusher like we've seen with D Ford or some of the smaller 3-4 outside linebacker types that have been so prevalent in Kansas City for the last 6-7 years. But another guy that takes a little bit longer to get there, but comes with a lot more power. And is that jive with you to be continuing what we heard from Brett Veach so much last offseason about getting tougher, getting more powerful?
Yeah, it definitely does. And, you know, and if you want to know what their prototypical physical look of what an edge defender in this 4-3 is going to look like, look at Breland Speaks. That's what they're expecting. I mean, they drafted him. I will go into my grave buying into the conspiracy theory that Brett Veach went and got Breland Speaks because he fully expected to play a 4-3 this season. That's the prototype. And yeah, I mean, I think the guy from Texas fits that. There's some other guys out there too. But that is, I mean, you know, and they're definitely going to want some nasty. I mean, they are. I mean, now you get that with a lot of these guys anyway, but make no mistake, they're not looking for a finesse guy here. They're not looking for a speed guy. Like, maybe you would put a D Ford in that category. They're looking for some guys who are going to be nasty on that outside.
Okay. I like where you're going. And I just want to ask you one theory that I've been kicking around. Clearly, out of this group, there's one guy at the top in Bosa that is a power-oriented edge rusher that can be what you're talking about. But I think most of the rest of the guys that can have an impact early in their careers are probably more the lighter speed rush type guys. Is there a scenario that you could see where they have Speaks and, say, Okafor as their base ends, and then on third down, when they really have to get out there to the pasture, that they want to have some type of guy that has that first step speed that they can kind of mix and match and bring that kind of guy in relief?
You could, and the only thing that makes me think that they're not going that direction is that if you wanted that, especially for 2019, kind of had that with Dee Ford.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it would have cost you a little bit, but the franchise tag wasn't prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could have fit Dee Ford in and kept him. So now, hey, can you go out and get a speed guy that's cheaper and maybe projects to be close to what Dee Ford was in the future? Yeah, I mean, that's certainly an option. You're giving up a little something for 2019, though. And I think, obviously, the Chiefs think they're a Super Bowl team right now. So I don't know why you would be looking to get worse unless it's a case of where you're looking to get different. And that's, to me, the common theme with all of their moves on the defensive side is that it's not necessarily completely about getting better or worse. It's about getting different. And that's why I think they're looking for something different from their edge guys. But, hey, could they see that it's a market right now for speed guys? Yeah, I mean, that's possible. I mean, it's certainly that's something that every team needs. You need to have that tool in your pocket. But I don't know. To me, everything that you know, Brett Veach has told us over the last 12 to 18 months, it seems like they're looking for something different in those edge guys now.
Well, I happen to agree with you. And that's what's got me thinking that if they want one of the premier guys that can be that big power edge, they're going to have to go up and get them. And again, this is all focusing on 29. Can they stay there and get something that helps them in one of their top priorities? And the more I look at it, the less I think that can happen. So I'm going to anticipate a move probably by default either way. But we've covered a lot of ground today, folks, about this draft. And we're starting this run up to covering more and more of the draft. And I'm going to pull Matt in every last second I can get him. So for today, we'll call it quits. But make sure you keep your ears open for the next time. We're going to get deep into what's going to change, what needs to change, and how they might go about it. But Matt, thanks for all your input today.
Absolutely, Ryan. Anytime.
And folks, make sure you check everything that Matt's doing. I think there's going to be some mock drafts up on Chiefs Digest here pretty quick. So check those out. We'll have stuff for you there, here, and on RGR Football. Thanks for listening today, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.